G'day, it's Daniel Harford. Welcome to the Best of the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. It was jam-packed. Check it out.
Great to see Adam White back up his performance. Soph's here as well. And finally, we've got her a chair, which is even better. We should have done that yesterday. Whitey, good morning.
Good morning. She didn't bring in coffee, though.
No, well, she's looking after you. She's not on domestic duties. She's sitting there on standby just in
part
case.
Part of the deal.
In case the defib's required. So we've got her a chair today, so welcome to you again, Soph. It's nice to have you with us. And did you get any sleep last night?
Yeah, I did. It was an interesting day's play.
Stand by. Lots more to talk about with that. Adam Romanaskas is a former Bombers champion these days, manager to the Stars, just fleecing people left, right and centre. Good morning to you, Remo.
Good morning. It's going to be one of those mornings, I think. Yeah, okay. That's fair. That's fair. Okay, I can see you're sort of promoting the product as well this morning.
What product?
Your product.
Well, no one can see what I'm wearing.
Well, we can take a photo.
No one can see.
The recovery lab.
The 4 White Street in Windsor recovery lab, just for all your recovery needs. Yeah. One-stop shop. No one can see that.
Well, we will take a photo and we will send it out on Twitter.
Just a little apparel, just small business apparel. Mm.
I'm really surprised that the Inner Sanctum is not the recovery lab.
Yes.
Well, it's very good. Well,
even Rodney Eade could be the recovery lab rather than whatever he is.
That's not a bad idea.
Speak to your people.
I'm going to speak to my people once we've worked out whether or not we're a viable business. I will get people to speak
others. I'm with you last night, Whitey. It was an interesting night of cricket.
Well, I wasn't talking about the cricket. I was talking about the menu.
Sorry?
We're going again on this.
Day two.
We're going again.
I can't stress this enough, I have been so disappointed in what Lord's has served up.
Well, it's because it's not hot dogs and chips.
Well, there needs to be some semblance of tradition.
No, fine dining. Curried eggs hangers is not
Thai spiced pumpkin soup.
Oh, yes. Good start.
No, thank you. Again, the bread rolls. That's okay. Grilled ribeye steak.
Oh, yes.
I'm going with that.
Where do we stop?
Depending if there's chips available to go with it, but I'm not sure.
Chips.
Chicken stir fry.
Yes. Yep. Winner.
Not really. I find that boring. Cajun grilled swordfish.
Yes.
With mango chili, coriander, and the lime salsa.
No, sticky coriander.
Vegetable paella.
Yes.
That's in brackets VE. Does that mean vegan?
Yeah, correct. Paella is how we say it too. The L's like a yeah.
Okay.
Paella.
Prawns with Mari Rose sauce, basmati rice.
Oh, yeah.
Sweet potato wedges.
Well, I'd come out 15 kilos heavier.
I came back from England 15 kilos heavier.
Yeah, but that'd be one sitting.
I played 70 games of cricket, but I also had 70 afternoon teas.
That's magnificent.
Peas, corn and carrot, Caesar salad. And this is where it really pops, the menu. Treacle sponge custard.
Dessert is not the main
Lemon meringue pie, fresh fruit salad. But again, selection of ice creams.
Well, that's important. Selection of ice cream is important. That is an extravaganza. That's a delicious menu.
Imagine
that can please anyone except
imagine
you.
Imagine if you're in first slip and the ball went between first and second slip down to the third man region and you had to run after the ball after eating some of that for lunch.
Well, you'd only have the bread roll.
And the treacle sponge.
And the ice cream.
Ice cream.
And these assorted ice creams. Now, that's a delicious menu. That's off the charts, in fact, for a game of cricket. That's absolutely ridiculous. Mm. For a game of cricket, remember.
No party pies at the MCG or the 4-20 pie.
What do they have at the MCG for lunch? Have you been involved in a test luncheon spread?
Yep. It's a sort of a selection of hams and stuff like that. It's a little bit like Christmas Day. Like
you get
hams and salads and that sort of stuff. It's like cold meats and that sort of stuff often.
Right.
And then they have some other stuff that I don't sort of go past, but yeah. It's solid.
A little basmati rice sort of chicken or that sort of stuff. Grilled steaks.
Oh, we're certainly not in that. So that's restaurant type stuff.
That is fine dining. That's fine fare. Well, it worked all right for the Aussies last night. So we'll talk more about it with Colo very, very shortly. 258, they're all out. We're 1 for 30. More on that shortly. Stuart Jew's getting a contract extension, looks like. Roma.
Yep.
Do you manage him?
Ned does, yes.
Yes, so the company does. That's a nice show of faith by the Gold Coast Suns board.
Well, I don't think they would want to be changing coaches again anytime soon. So I think some stability there is a good thing. Whether they can get the results now is a whole different question. That's the great challenge for Stuart Jew.
I mean, being sent to Harvard University through the offseason.
A lot of coaches go there.
To attend a leadership program similar to the one at Bucks and Dimmer.
I think Chris Scott has...
Don't they have good leadership seminars at Swinburne or La Trobe? Why do they have to go to the other side of the world to leadership?
Harvard.
I know it is.
They are the best in the world.
What an absolute...
Well, if it's the one that Bucks
Why did you have
Dimmer
to go to America to watch sport?
Great point.
Because Tom Brady doesn't play at Laverton.
Well, maybe Swinburne doesn't offer the leadership course here in Australia. Well,
that's a ridiculous comparison, and I'm sure that you'd wish you hadn't said that.
Why?
I'm sort of with him. But regardless, it's a good sign for Stewie Jew. It's a good thing for Gold Coast. Because one thing they do need, as you rightly point out, Rama, is stability.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, stability has to be with the right people. Mm. So clearly the Gold Coast have worked out that he's our man and he can't do it, no one can, yay. But stability is absolutely critical for that footy club at the moment. The last thing it needs is volatility and question marks and innuendo and rumour.
And I think the stability starts with Mark Evans, who's obviously the CEO, who has a great history within football. He's doing a terrific job, a tough job up there, albeit it is hard work. I was up there a couple of weeks ago and I was able to spend a couple of hours with him, and he's explaining the challenges that they face continually, not just on field, but off field with what's going on. And it's tough. It is tough for them. I think we only see down here the result on the field and we go, geez, that's poor. But it is tough going up there, tough going to get some cut through.
Yeah. You know my view on it all.
Mm. You think they should be packed up?
Yep. I don't think it'll work. And I actually think the next two or three years are going to be the most important 3 years, because if they can't get any cut through, because it is not just about the on-field performance, it is actually about the cut through, because it does get to a point where you go, well, this is a waste of time. Now, I know that they will quote things like all the junior football programs and the girls playing footy in Queensland and all that sort of thing, but I could also suggest that, well, that would happen anyway with the Brisbane Lions there. So what is an extra team? It might help a certain percent, but I just can't help but think that this is becoming the Cricket Australia 11 in cricketing terms, where it's just a development team that people just pick off the best talent after 4, 5, 6 years, and then they go again and they can't break that cycle.
Well, that's what I was just going to mention. Make no mistake, their greatest challenge over the next 3 years is player retention, because if they're able to retain all their players through that period of time, that changes the whole age demographic of their list in terms of talent.
Absolutely.
They then don't have to go and get guys that are 18 to 25 on other teams' lists to top up.
It's an extreme version of the Giants. The Giants themselves, I think, are starting to get a little bit frustrated at the fact that their best players are taken after 5, 6, 7 years, you know, pre-agency or all that sort of term. And then they can still get some of the older players like a Brett Deledio or a Steve Johnson to come up towards the end of their careers. But with the Suns, all their good players are getting picked off after 3 or 4 years, and the players that they are getting at the other end of their career are only players that can't get a game for their respective teams down here in Melbourne or in South Australia, etc. So that's just a poor version of what the Giants are doing, and the Giants can't quite get there at the moment. So that's the cycle they need to break. We're already hearing that King wants to come back to Melbourne and play with his brother and all these sorts of rumours. I'm not saying they're true, but they're the sort of things that really bog down a football club trying to break a cycle.
And on that, like, Ben King has lived with Mark Evans.
Mm.
Beautiful house on the Gold Coast. So they are doing everything humanly possible to keep their young players.
Mm. They were starting 10 metres behind the start line, though, weren't they?
They were. Yeah.
So, interesting. I mean, that's the sort of thing, Huff, that if they were to lose him after 1 or 2 years,
be heartbreaking.
You start thinking, is this just too hard?
Well, they'll fight the fight. They'll be right.
Of course, they've got no other choice but to do that.
They'll fight the fight. Simon Goodwin's fighting fights. Priority picks are archaic, is the word that he used yesterday when he was talking about priority picks, Rama. You got a take on that? talking about access to other good players from other clubs, not only us as a club. I think it's every club. We're in a position now where we've brought in future trading of picks, and the priority pick was something that was set up a long, long time ago. I think it's become a bit archaic in its relevance. I think there's other avenues where we can incentivise teams and bring that equalisation to prevalence. Priority pick, archaic, says Simon.
Yeah. Equalisation is that everybody gets an equal chance at it, and there should be absolutely no advantages to anyone.
But there's no equalisation. There is nothing equal about the competition.
No, I'm not saying. I said that's what equalisation is.
Yeah, but it's we don't have it.
No.
So I'm not sure we can just pick and choose the parts we want to have it.
With the areas you can control, yes. You probably can't control a fixture.
Well, you can.
Well, we're not going to have home and away.
Well, 17 or 34, that's the only
one. So that's, even 17's not going to be fair because you might, have to travel to play West Coast, but then another team doesn't have to travel to play West Coast.
Yeah, but we'll get you on the flip side. We'll get you on the flip side.
That's why it's going to be more preferable than what it is.
Yeah, you can't play 34 games.
No, that's right. So that's what I'm saying. But what you can control is making sure that all lists are assembled the same way. The draft evens it out. Don't give people advantages for not being very good or stuffing things up.
Yeah, but we've had this discussion so many times. The AFL want every club basically to win 7 or 8 games. And it's every...
It'd be hard to make the 8 with 7 or 8 wins.
Well, I understand that. But every single week, then it is a competitive round. At the moment, there's probably still a couple of easy kills out there in terms of games. The AFL want all 9 games to be really competitive.
And we've got a very even competition at the moment outside, Gold Coast.
Did you know Braden Sire played basketball and didn't tell the club? Well, we worked that yesterday. Fill in. Still one of the great names. I got a lot of joy out of that yesterday. Again, just sitting in the car, just thinking about the name that he chose and the trouble he was going to get into. It's funny. We spoke yesterday about someone was not telling us the truth. Turns out it was the player, funnily enough. He's in a bit of trouble, Brady.
They have a history at Collingwood of players not telling the truth.
Well, seemingly that there's been some occasions from what we can recall in the recent decade or so. Yeah, it was... I sort of cringed a bit when I heard that he hadn't told and it was the truth and they were unaware what was going on.
Why,
thought, oh, man, what are you doing?
Whitey's right. They have had a history of players lying. Why do you lie? Is it because you're...
Because you know you've
done the wrong thing? Or are you afraid of the penalty? Or are you afraid of what your fellow teammates will say? What would...
It's probably all three.
You know you've done the wrong thing and you're scared of what might happen. That's why you lie. Doesn't matter what it is.
It doesn't seem to happen at other clubs.
But I'm talking anything.
Is this a product of a past Collingwood when the reins were so tight at that football club that they were scared to really do anything or show any type of personality away from the field? Now, when that's been loosened last year from Nathan Buckley, they make a grand final, loosened again. It's just...
I think that's fair. I think that's a fair... The other way of looking at it also is that you can't get away with things if you play for Collingwood because the profile of the team and the players is so high that, we were talking before about the Gold Coast Suns. I'm sure the Gold Coast Suns can get away with things that, players at other clubs can't. Because I think there's always been that little bit of frustration with Collingwood players is that they can't get the oxygen or the breathing space that other clubs can have.
Go to another club then. Go to Gold Coast.
Yeah. And obviously that's a fair comment. But I'm saying that's what they often think. Yeah. So, I know we haven't got a lot of time, but do you want to talk about Nick Kyrgios, Daniel?
Not really.
No.
I don't think he deserves any airtime.
No.
I'll talk about Ash Barty. She got through. Great to have Ash get through. But I don't think we waste any time on people that don't deserve our interest.
Just asking.
I'm just pleased with your response then, Adam Romanoskis. Just move straight on.
It really makes me happy that I got off at the right time.
Yeah, no, well played.
Yeah.
Well played. And just by the way, we're going to get to Adam Collins after this. I think the people of Mildura owe Matt Stewart an apology. Matt Stewart, when we're up there for the Mildura Cup, was concerned about the pelicans on the water and what they might be getting up to. Today's Sunraysia Daily front page. Pesky pelican pinches purse.
Say that four times really fast.
Pesky pelican pinches purse. Pesky pelican. Can't do that. Anyway, pesky pelican pinches purse is the front page picture and story in the Sunraysia Daily today. Matt Stewart is onto this. He was onto this a long time ago. And it's for the people of Mildura listening.
On 13:59 a.m.
On 13:59 a.m. Good morning to you, by the way. But I think you should all collectively get together today in the street, form, get a video, and say sorry to Matt Stewart. You betcha he is. Davey Warner was the lone batsman out for Australia on the second day of play, the first real day, but the second day of play of the second test at Lords of the Ashes. At 1-for-30, the Aussies overnight after bowling England out for 258 with some very impressive spells from Josh Hazlewood. In fact, Adam Collins, host of the Final Word podcast with Jeff Lemon, which you heard earlier this morning, has been good enough to join us just jumping out of a restaurant. Good morning, Colo. Good evening to you.
G'day, Harp. Yes, it's my birthday, so my girlfriend's taking me out to dinner.
Ah, oh, happy birthday.
But she understands that some things have to wait, and one of those things is the main course for I have to... I take great pleasure in telling you all about the first bat launch.
Well, we want to hear all about it because it was a good day of cricket. Well, you know, we had to wait a day for it to happen, but when Australia won the toss and Tim Payne said, we'll bowl, what did you think?
Well, I immediately thought, how frequently has that happened? Australia sending England in an Ashes test match. Not that often, it would seem. 2005 at Edgbaston stood out. And a couple of people were making those comparisons just after lunch when Joe Denley was batting quite nicely. There was nothing doing with the pitch, and Rory Byrne seemed to sort of bounce in form at the same time. And look at and then Cummins and Hazlewood did a tag team on Joe Denley. Cummins set him up, sort of a Jeff Thompson impersonation, softening him up with a series of short balls that hit him in the head. And then Hazlewood bowled a little temper to him outside the off stump, nibble behind. That was the third wicket. And then started the role that we're so familiar with this England middle order. They can't seem to string together a consistent performance at the moment. Johnny Bairstow made a half century and Chris Wokes some handy runs down at number nine. But fundamentally, their innings was broken through the middle stages. And Hazlewood up top, you think about the fact that he wasn't even in the side last week. I can seldom remember seeing him bowl better at all at any stage for Australia, and it started in his first over today when he picked up Jason Roy. It was quite interesting that before the series started that there was no trash talk from David Warner or Nathan Lyon like there was a couple of years ago in Australia. It was Josh Hazlewood who had a bit of a pop at Jason Roy, reminding people that he'd never played a test match and that making runs with the red ball was a lot different to boshing sort of limited over centuries, and it ended up going for three balls before he sent him packing. So most impressive from Hazlewood. Cummins was the enforcer. Line equals Dennis Lilly on 355 test wickets. Siddle made a contribution as well. So I think, again, the bowling from this Australian team in this series so far has been quite outstanding.
And, Colo, that's what I was going to ask you about. What did you think of the combination of Cummins, Hazlewood and Siddle as the three strike bowlers? Do you think that worked? Do you think that's sustainable?
Well, it looked pretty good, didn't it? They created nine chances between the three of them. That is to say, Cummins and Hazlewood picked up three apiece and Siddle got one but had two straightforward catches off Burns put down behind the wicket. So, look, if you're creating nine chances in the space of 2.5 sessions and the spinner's picking up three wickets, then you're doing your job, aren't you? Siddle wasn't as frugal as he was last week at Edgbaston, but he had a bad start. I think that hurt his confidence a little bit. But as soon as he started his second spell, he was creating opportunities and back to that familiar, nagging Peter Siddle line and length that we've become so accustomed to through the second half of his career. And then Lyon, a really important intervention with Ben Stokes, who looked, you know, Stokes did great nick and he came out swinging and hit the boundary a couple of times. And Lyon down the slope around the wicket, beat him with the straight ball, great bit of bowling. And then they were, as I said before, they were kind of broken. A good partnership between Bairstow and Wokes, but the damage was largely done earlier on by Hazlewood, Cummins and Lyon.
Friday form is upon us now and it's a very big welcome to Warren Huntley, who joins us on this Friday morning. Good morning, Waz.
Morning, Harf. And on the Teague train issue. I don't know where I went wrong, but my daughter's a mad Carlton supporter. I don't know why she's not on the Tiger train, but she was mad keen for Teague to get the job. And
was she?
Was rampant on social media. She thinks she played a role in that.
Good on her. The power of the people might have assisted. Although they did say yesterday it wasn't a popularity contest. He's one of them merit, but no doubt your daughter got him over the line as far as I'm concerned. Nick Quinn wouldn't have from the Tab. He's got beautiful hair. It's a little bit auburn in this light, I must admit, but it's great to have him on a Friday morning. Morning, Nicholas.
Morning, Daniel. Morning, all. It's pretty brutal, this light. You don't get away with much in here.
No, you don't. This is like it's. I'm looking at it admiring. I can't take my gaze off it.
Could be dark in here and we'll still be able to see the colour.
I can't take my eyes off it. It's just luscious. Beautiful. Glorious. It's glorious. For those that don't know what we do in the Friday form, is we have a bit of a look at the next day's quaddy in the Metropolitan meeting in Melbourne. We're at Caulfield tomorrow, and we've got good racing ahead. Looking forward to it. The PB Lawrence is the feature event on the card, but race six is the first leg of the quaddy team, so let's get our teeth into that early doors over the 1,100 metres, the Cazette Stakes. We've got 12 going around. Brooklyn Hustle taken out yesterday was, which is a bit of a setback. Would have liked to have seen him back in action. But regardless, a very, very good race. And Alive, the Blue Diamond winner, is favourite at tab.com.au at 4:40.
And she's coming to hand well. I've got a feeling in time and this preparation, she's probably going to be aimed at races a little bit longer. But she probably should have won on debut. Then she went through a sequence of winning the Blue Diamond and the only other defeat was third in the Golden Slipper. So she's quality, and yep. I think she's a must-include. Her jump-outs have been fine. I just think as an older filly, she's probably going to be stronger as she gets beyond 11 and 1,200 metres. But I think she's a must-include. In the Godolphin colours, I think you've got to include Exhilarates as well. It's a bit of a blending of some form of horses that have shown the class and some that might have a little bit of race fitness. Absolute Flirt, I can mount a case to say she should have won at Moonee Valley behind Tarayef, just didn't get momentum at a crucial stage. I think she certainly should have tested Tarayef on that occasion. Cheerleader's a fast filly. She'll come across from that wider barrier draw and a little freshen up for Sizzlefly, who was beaten by a smart horse in King of Hastings last start. I'm going pretty wide in most of the legs bar one, and they're the horses I'm focusing on in the first leg.
Quinny, the market for the Blue Diamond winner?
I thought before...
No, I'm going to get to him.
The market Lyre now a $4.20 favourite. Cheerleader a $6.50. Equal second elect with Sizzlefly. Exhilarates at $7.50. Lankenstar at $9.50. Warren, how challenging do you find doing the form of the now 3-year-old fillies on the back of 2-year-old form?
Oh, it's a real challenge because you really don't know what development those horses have made, and it's a big part of their physical development and even mental development, the 2-year-old to the 3-year-old season. So you've got to cast your eye over the jump outs. That's subjective, as we all know. So their performance as a 2-year-old go a long way, because if they've shown high talent like Lyre did as a 2-year-old and others in this race, you've got to respect that. But then you're also looking for the ones that might have shown some improvement. And until race day, it's really hard to know.
So I imagine the jump outs are huge, because 7 of the 12 are first up in this race.
Yeah, it's look, I thought Brooklyn Hustle was probably the best of the trialers that I'd seen into this. Her trial at Cranbourne was terrific, but just don't think she scoped that well yesterday. So maybe she's just had to have a little bit of treatment, and hopefully we can get her back on track sooner rather than later, or connections can, this preparation, because she looked to trial really well to me, and she could be a bit awkward at the barriers. But if she began cleanly, I think she would have been my top selection in that race. But she's not going around.
So we'll keep an eye on her for next time when she jumps out. Righto. Rama, what are our numbers for the first leg of the quaddy, please?
1, 4, 5, 6, and 9.
1, 4, 5, 6, and 9.
Wasn't so a lot of conviction.
No,
there, was it?
Are you fair dinkum or not?
Well, I wasn't sure about the 9. That's where...
I think it's important, Rama, that if you're going to do it, you do it properly. You've got to do it in order of preference as opposed to a numerical order.
No, I like numerical order better.
Well, that's what Woz gave us. That was the order he gave us.
Yeah, I'm a numerical order man for quaddies. I just...
we thought you were frozen over there a couple of minutes ago.
That was the order that Warren, our expert, gave us.
Fair enough.
Well, I think that's a choice. I think there are people who prefer to give their quaddy numbers 12, 7, yeah. 6, 1, 2, because if you're going to trim one out, you
Correct.
Want to trim the one that's the last one.
Correct.
In.
I believe that that's
I can
the
subscribe to both theories.
I think that's the appropriate way of doing it, to be honest.
Right, now you want to tell the expert what to do,
exactly.
Is that what you're
saying? Exactly. Warren, you do it the way you like.
This is your show, Warren.
We should
Warren.
Put a poll. We should do a poll.
No, we shouldn't. No.
Numerical order or preference order?
No, we're not doing any polls. Warren's our expert. He does it however the hell he likes.
Okay.
Correct.
I'll just be quiet.
So, can you just check? I mean, there must be a heart rate monitor out there that needs to be fixed. Race 7 is the second leg of the quaddy, the Regal Roller Stakes over the 1,200. Now, Regal Roller was a 1,400 Caulfield specialist, wasn't he? Not a 1,200 Caulfield specialist.
Well, he stretched out to 1,400 metres. He was effective at the shorter trip, but then he went out to Group 1 level at 1,400 metres. He used to roll along. Clint McDonald was in the studio with Mickey Blue during the week. Might have even been yesterday reminiscing about the Regal Roller days.
I used to love Regal Roller. What a good horse he was. Good to me a few times. Anyway, he's got a stakes named after him. 1,200 metres, got 9 going around. And Be Good to Your Mother, one of the great names in racing, just keeps picket fencing all the way through, was his favourite at tab.com.au.
He's a blending of some off-season form with some horses that are perhaps proven at a better level, but he hasn't been tested at an elite level yet, Be Good to Your Mother, but geez, a nice horse. I was on track at Warrnambool for racing.com when he had a gallop between races going back a week or so ago. He worked with a stablemate who goes around in the last, working from home, and he was awesome in that gallop. His jump outs have been good, and he's coming to hand really well, and I think that there's a, not necessarily a chips in, but there's an intent from Daniel Bowman to have this horse with the residual fitness from that winter campaign ready to go in this race, and he's a clear top pick for me. And the other horse I'm including is the horse that chased Assertive Approach last start in Adelaide. So we know that form's strong, with Assertive Approach running well but not winning down the straight at Flemington last Saturday. And he's a big horse, Behemoth. He'll be standing up, Be Good to Your Mother, a bit of a start at the turn into the home straight. And you've got to take a punt at some stage and have an opinion half. And for me, they're the two I'm working in this race. Just Be Good to Your Mother and Behemoth.
Oh, now here we go. Now, where's Whitey gone now? He safes out the back of checking the saline solution, and all of a sudden he misses out on the good stuff.
Good betting race, this one. Be Good to Your Mother's been popular at the $2.50 quote, but Behemoth's been the firmer, $4.80 into $3.90. Haunted a $6.50 chance. Fundamentalist at $7.50. Antar scratched from a race last Saturday in preference for this, the other runner in single figure odds at $8.50. But Behemoth, the best backed runner, and the mighty Regal Roller won 7 of his 12 career starts over 1,400, including the Futurity Stakes at Group 1 level.
Oh, what did it. So, can you just turn that machine down if you can, please? It's just coming through the microphones. Thank you. Thank you to Soph. So, Rama.
Just 9 and 7.
9 and 7. There we go.
Or 7 and 9.
Depending on how you like your quarter numbers given. 9 and 7. Or 7 and 9. Righto, that means I reckon we're going to get a few numbers in race 8, the third leg of the quarter, which is the feature event on the card, boys. Group 2, Wait for Age event over the 1,400 metres. We've got 11 going around and some names that are very familiar to our racing fans out there. And down the bottom is a very special little filly. Mystic Journey was. What do you reckon?
Well, you have to have her in. Now, if you listened to Adam Trinder with Michael Falgate yesterday, you'd be a little bit reserved. And obviously, with a Cox Plate as your main target for the preparation, you're not going to be fully wound up. She missed that run in the Bletchingley because of the state of the track over 1,200 metres, had a trial in Devonport subsequently. So she's kicking off against some talented, but not the absolute, I suppose, A grade in terms of right through the field, but I think you've got to include her. But from the top of the page, I think you have to include Hartnell. I think as an older horse, he seems to appreciate being kept fresh. He's had 4 starts at the track and distance here for 2 wins and 2 minor placings, and he's a multiple Group 1 winner. So he's pretty well graded in a Group 2 under the weight for age conditions. I thought Cliff's Edge did enough first up. He loomed first up, and I thought maybe condition just blew out. He would improve with that run under the belt. Recent jump out for 50 stars was good. I know that the stable are of the opinion that he'll improve out of the campaign or into the campaign as well. But, gee, I like the way he found the line in a recent jump out wide on the track. And you have to include Mystic Journey because of her quality and her upside. We don't have a ceiling on her yet. She may well be even better this campaign than she was last campaign. So I don't think you can anchor her in it. No, I think you need Hartnell, Cliff's Edge and 50 stars as the insurance.
So, Quinny, everyone loves a champion. Everyone loves a prospective champion. Mystic Journey seems to be that. She's a mare now, by the way, not a filly these days. Everyone loves that storyline. Do the punters get involved on emotion in these sort of things?
Look, potentially. And maybe we need to get away from the mindset where we had Winx and we just expected her to come back and win, and that's what she did. But we know that her grand final this campaign is going to be in late October with the Cox Plate. She's a $6 favourite for that race. If she wins on Saturday, we know how those markets can sometimes overreact, so there'll be a machete taken to that quote. She went up $1.60 on Monday off the back of the nominations, which was just way too short, especially considering it wasn't all in market at that point in time. 50 Stars was well backed at double figure odds. She reopened at $1.80 following the barrier draw. She's got out to even money. If you like the favourite Mystic Journey, my advice would be keep your powder dry. She should continue to drift out slightly and you'll get better than the even money currently on offer. Hartnell, the 2017 winner of this race, a 4.40 second elect. He's been backed in from 6.50 since the barrier draw. Then we've got Cliff's Edge on the next line of betting at 7.50. 50 Stars at 9 and Canedna best the rest at $14. But this is the predicament, Warren, that punters face at this time of year. Where do you back the best horse in the race at a short quote in a race that they're not primed for? But if they were primed for, it'd be like finding money in the street.
Well, you don't want to take short odds about a horse that's not primed for a race, do you? It just doesn't make sense. I suppose the race in New Zealand, the Foxbridge tomorrow is an example where Tiako Shark's a really exciting horse, but he mightn't be primed for that race. He'll be the best horse to come out of the race, but you just need to know and understand, I think, the campaigns and the preparations, and therefore you only want to bet when you think the price is right. And if the horse is under the odds, she might come out and win easily. I wouldn't be shocked at all. But first up with a Cox Plate campaign in mind and missing that run first up in the Bletchingly, I just wouldn't want to take too short odds, but certainly wouldn't be shocked if she won.
And have you seen the mindset change on the back of Black Caviar and Winx because they won every start? A lot of people say Maccabi Diva's final race campaign was the best they've ever seen, and yet she ran second to Ladder the Manor in that preparation.
That's because she's a stayer and she had to get fit to get out to those staying trips, and that's what you want to see is progressing out, and that's what good trainers do is they work back from the goal and understand the strengths of their horses, and we don't know if Mystic Journey's a 2,040 metre horse yet, but Adam Trinder's confident she is, and that's how he's preparing her to be ready for that task. And David Hall initially and Lee Friedman were preparing Maccabi Diva to be at her peak for a 3,200 metre race, but she was good enough to win races on the way through when she got to the right trip.
So, Quinny, you said before that she is $6 for the Cox Plate.
Yes.
And if she wins, there might be some fluctuation.
There will be. If she loses, she might get out slightly, but unfortunately, looking at these future markets, they seem to go in a lot and not go out a lot of the time. So I think for it to drift, something would have to go significantly wrong. If she runs a nice second, third or fourth, which Michael Felgate is now tweeting to the world that is what he anticipates will happen on the back of the interview yesterday, she'll probably remain about $6. But if she comes out and wins impressively, she won't be $6, and she might not be $6 again if the race does fall away between now and race day.
Numbers, please, Rammer.
1, 4, 5 and 11.
Nice work. That's the third leg of the quaddie. The last one is over the 1,100 metres, and there are 13 going around, and I think, certainly the markets that I've got in front of me, Quinny, from yesterday, we've got equal favourites in Miss Ayano and Bella Valor at 5.50 at tab.com.au was.
Wide finish for me, half, and you need to include those runners that you mentioned, but reference that working from home, worked with Be Good to Your Mother in a meeting at Warrnambool recently, and her jump outs leading into her first up run are terrific. A little edge off the track. I'm thinking we're going to be working with a soft track. I don't think it'll deteriorate much more than that.
Yep.
Not going to get a heap of rain today, and Antar was a late scratching with a track deterioration at Flemington last week, so hopefully for Antar's connections he can go around. But I think working from home with the edge off the track is ready to run well first up. She's big odds, and I think she's a must include. Grey Shadows on the fresh side has a great record at the Caulfield 1100. Miss Ayano was a case of heart in your mouth stuff with Craig Williams last start, but he knew what he had underneath him, and she sprinted quickly to win. Wider barrier draw, but Mark Zara aboard here, no disadvantage there. Causeway Girls trialled up well. Bella Vella's running good times in Adelaide. And a horse that another one I think is trialling well in jump outs going into the first up run is Victory Kingdom from the Hayes and Dabbing operation. So pretty wide finish for me. They're the ones I think we have to include.
Quinny?
So by the sounds of it, have you got the Bowman runner on top in the lucky last to end the day? Working from home?
Yet to be decided.
Okay.
It'll probably slot into the Rammer's roughy situation. Ooh, somewhere.
That's what I was going to say. A $21 chance there to end the day. So $21. Could be a big day for the stable. And number four working from home at big odds in the last. But I'm a bit flat, Warren. I don't normally tip a roughy. And when I do, I'd like to get a little bit of a push. You didn't even mention Jordan, number nine. Can you give me something?
I think there was a glimmer of hope last start that she's getting back to her best. She was safely held, but fitter with two runs under the belt. Not too sure how the inside barrier is going to be playing by this stage of the day. She might get buried back in the field, but I wouldn't talk you out of her in a wide race, Quinny, because I think she was disappointing first up, perhaps with excuses, but she showed that she's progressing well with a better second up run, and she might be even further improved with that run under the belt.
Sounded like a bloke who was really just trying to make you feel good.
You know what? He's really much believe. More diplomatic than some of the other blokes that have your Matt Stewarts and your Dino, so just give me a no, or don't be kidding yourself, or something like that. So
I'm thinking, Warren mentioned six. Six of the 13, basically half the field, did mention yours, so it's no...
Yeah, not a good push. Now, there has been a good go, though, for Miss Ayano, who's been $11 into 550. Ooh. So good each-way support there in the last for number six.
Rightio, so they're the number. What are the numbers, Rammer?
4, 5, 6, 10, 11, 12.
4, 5, 6, 10, 11, 12. So they are your numbers for Warren's Quaddy. At this stage for Caulfield tomorrow, of course, the punters panel tomorrow will sharpen the pencil a little bit further. Was, have you got a... Is Rammer Ruffy... Are we going with that one?
I reckon we can top and tail the program with a couple of Rammer's Ruffies.
Oh, hang on a second. This is two Rammer's Ruffy. This is rare air.
This is great. This is fantastic.
I love this. What do you got for us?
First up run without much luck at Moonee Valley of race one, number five, Exaltara, was good in an even race. I think he's somewhere around about the $14, $15 mark last time I checked. Oh. I think he could run well at that price and be good to your mother at the price Quinny just quoted in the last. I think it's over the odds at that price. So a couple of Rammer's Ruffies that we can play each way, race one, number five, and race nine, number four.
Was it be good to your mother working from home?
Sorry, working from home, race nine, number four.
Just checking.
So you're all up there at $294.
Oh, I'm on. I am on.
Just a dollar.
Just a dollar's all you need.
Just a dollar's all I need. And I am in business. You got any other bests for the day, or what do you got for us there?
Well, I might have been getting ahead of myself with mentioning Be Good to Your Mother as a roughie, because he's favourite. But I think he's wound up enough to take that biggest test. I like him. Race 7, number 9, Be Good to Your Mother. And well found earlier in the day from a good first up run. The two stables I'm focusing in on are the Elliot and Zara stable and the Daniel Bowman stable. Age of Chivalry's already been well found, but I think second up at 1,400 metres, clearly the one to beat, race four, number six.
How well found has Age of Chivalry been, Quinny?
Age of Chivalry has been popular, now into $2.30 from $2.80, and hopefully can get the job done.
Righto, that's
not
good.
Alert Warren to the little black dot in the form guide to upset him.
And I have no doubt that around about this time here, around 22, when Brent Harvey was playing, he'd just start to get excited again. He'd have a bit of a lull through the last month or so, knowing that finals are around the corner, and this is when the grass is starting to smell a bit different, getting cut, Boomer, and your time to shine is now. Good morning.
Good morning, Half. Well, the grass is certainly not shining in local football at the minute. Have you seen the conditions of the grounds?
Seen the grounds, yes.
Worst conditions I've ever played in last week.
Ever?
Unbelievable.
Where'd you play?
At the kennel. The ground was no good.
Really?
Puddles up to my... I know this is... People are going to laugh at this, but puddles up to my shins.
Well, like
proper puddles.
2.5 centimetres.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at. it is for the AFL, though. It's fantastic. Not so much if you're Sydney, Melbourne on a Friday night playing for, I don't know, what are they playing for, Whitey? Nothing.
Who's a Melbourne, Sydney person? Poor goodness me.
Yeah, but it's just a nothing game on a Friday night, isn't it? Well scheduled.
The Jared Healy Cup.
The Jared Healy Cup. I like it.
There you go.
But for everybody else, you're right. You're right, Half. It's beautiful. The grass is not so much here because we had a little bit of rain. In a couple of weeks, it's going to be absolutely beautiful leading into the finals.
Well, I was going to ask questions of our track manager at Geelong, James Dalton, about that, but I was told I wasn't allowed to.
Correct, because...
Too heavy.
It's a very interesting discussion, Boomer, that sort of thing.
Right.
News was upon us.
Poor old George. He's lost his scope. He's lost his creativity.
We've had to rein him in.
But there's a bit going on too, isn't there? Obviously, everyone retires this time of year because it's going to be their last home game. We've got about six or seven of them, which is fantastic to cheer off our stars of the game.
Yep.
Coaches are getting appointed. Coaches are getting sacked. There's a bit going on in the life of AFL.
Yeah, so we'll speak to Lids about retiring a little bit later on this hour. You have that conversation with him about when and why. And there's, of course, the conversation yesterday and today in the papers that Dale Thomas is going to announce his retirement too.
Yeah, well, we've sort of speculated on that all week as to what would happen and if Carlton didn't give him another contract, whether he would potentially look at somewhere like the Suns, but it doesn't look like that's going to be the case.
Is he the right fit for the Suns?
Probably not.
Yeah, I agree.
So I asked Daniel Hufford this question yesterday about David Teague as a former teammate. You were a former teammate of David as well.
Yep.
Did you think when you played with him that one day he would become a senior coach? Do you have any sort of characteristics of that?
Nope.
When he was playing?
Absolutely not. And I don't say that because there's not too many people
that I do say he's going to be a great coach or he's going to even coach. Adam Simpson was one. We had at North Melbourne, we had a really weird setup where we had a part-time midfield coach, and Simo was taking the meetings when he wasn't there. And even when he was there, Simo was still taking the meetings. So you could see that he was going to coach one day. Now, how good he was going to be, no one knew. But other than that, no one else really springs to mind and says, he's going to be a coach. And Teague was just in that category of everybody else. Heard some fantastic things about him when he was coaching at Adelaide. Obviously coached against North Melbourne then. So it's fantastic, though. But he was a great player. There's a category of courageous, and there's three guys that I've played with that sit above them. It's called stupidity. It was Glenn Archer, Lee Colbert, and David Teague is in that category as well. So his football was... Yes, he wasn't the best kick mark or handball or didn't have the most possessions, but courageous and team man, he was fantastic.
Hard to argue with that. And he's got the job. We're going to speak to him after 8 o'clock, which we're very keen to do. So we'll do more of that with Tiggy after 8 o'clock. There's a bit going on in footy. You mentioned the retirements, you mentioned the new coach appointments, but also there's a bit happening in terms of the run to the finals, Boomer. And this stage of the year, often we have the finals almost set, the lineup almost set. That's not the case this year, and particularly this round. I mean, this is a real season-shaping round, not just for one or two teams, but for basically 10 or 11 teams. I can't recall a round quite like this of recent memory at this time of year.
No, it's going to be fantastic, isn't it? Even the game, like I think Carlton St Kilda is going to be a really good game. Teague's just got the job. Ratton's going for the job, but when you look at the ladder, who would have thought Brisbane Lions would have been vying for top spot on the AFL ladder? So Brisbane v Geelong, Richmond versus West Coast. People are saying that could be the grand final preview already. Adelaide are playing against a team that needs to make it or try to secure a top in spot in the top four. Adelaide are trying to secure a spot in the top eight. Bulldogs Giants. I think there's some absolute rippers. So. It's good the way it works out. Unfortunately, the Friday night game's not awesome, but that's footy. We're going to get that every now and then. And the rest of the games, though, there's something in it for every single team.
All right, on the time-honoured, award-winning podcast, By the Numbers.
Who
does that?
Well, I had a cameo hosting appearance yesterday. I asked the question of our team. If you had to pick one team as your premiership team, the one that you wanted to nail yourself to for the rest of the season, who would it be? Now, we're going to learn a hell of a lot in the next couple of weeks. We're going to learn a hell of a lot over the next couple of days that'll assist in that process. But as it stands now, if you had one team, who would it be, Boomer?
The West Coast Eagles.
Rama?
Geelong.
Daniel?
Isn't that interesting? Richmond by the length.
I'm absolutely Richmond as well.
Well...
But I'm knee-deep in Richmond.
You're emotionally invested as well as perhaps another angle invested.
But it's interesting because, don't worry about me, but you've named your three. Now I'm going to go back. Why?
Because a couple of reasons. They're getting players back. They're playing their best footy in the last 6 weeks, and they've been there before in the MCG.
Rama?
Geelong play well in close games. Their best football this year has been better than... anybody, in my opinion, particularly in the early part of the season, and they've changed, I think, which is most important. Geelong over previous years have served up exactly the same. This year, they have made a clear change to their game plan.
Boomer?
I think West Coast are the most even team. I thought their midfield might have been their weakness, but they've certainly stepped up and taken the mantle of nearly the best midfield in the competition. They will get two home finals, so they'll make the grand final for me. And they did it last year. The question was, can they win at the MCG? Well, we know the answer now.
All right, I'll flick it around again. Can West Coast win it from if they don't finish top two?
Yes.
They can, but it will make it a lot harder. I think they need two home finals, which they'll win both.
Rama, with Geelong, are you nervous about the fact that they haven't recaptured that form from the first half of the year, or have they just been waiting for this time of year?
Waiting. They went into a hard training phase after the bye. They got themselves absolutely cherry ripe for the start of the season because they knew the difficulty of their schedule, their draw, and they were always going to have a flat patch in this second part of the season. I thought to be able to keep a team to one goal in football is very, very difficult, and Geelong were able to do that. That shows how tight their defensive structure is. And as I said, their change has been exceptional. Their forward half pressure now is finals pressure.
And on the Tigers, Daniel, this is just spontaneous. This is quite good.
You're liking these questions.
Yeah, I do. I like putting you under pressure. Without Alex Rance, are you concerned from a Richmond perspective, or because it happened in round one, they've been able to make the necessary adjustments and it's not as big a deal as we thought it was going to be at the time?
No, I forgot Alex Rance even played. No, because of the fact they've been working with a system with a playing group since round one. If it was round 18 that this had happened, I'd be much more wary of the Tigers' chances and concern, but zero concern. They've shown that they've been capable against anyone.
They cannot win the premiership without Trent Cotchin.
I'm not so sure about that.
You tell you someone who has really lifted.
It certainly helped. I think it certainly helped.
Someone who's really lifted in his absence recently is Dion Prestia.
That's correct.
He has scored more coaches' votes than anyone in the competition over the last 6 weeks. I think it's four games in a row he's had over 30 disposals. But he has taken his footy, I reckon, to a new level this year.
Well, Trent Cotchin is a finals player.
Mm.
Finals. Yeah, Trent Cotchin is a star. Do not underestimate that.
But it helps when you play on the ball and Cotchin inside, and they only tagged that. If they tag Dusty. Mm. So you're getting, we know what the midfielders do. And I think he's been fantastic press here as well. I'm with you. But the midfielders, now let's shake hands at the start of the game and shake hands at the end of the game. If you don't have 25 playing midfield all day, there's something wrong.
Last question for you before we move on. And Daniel takes it wherever way he likes. who is your floater, your bolter from outside the obvious top four that are playing each other this week that could do the most damage? They don't have to necessarily be in the top eight at the moment. Because I sort of feel that it's a top 10, top 11 at the moment, and we're starting finals this week. Coaches have said that. Finals start this week. Who's the team?
Coaches know. The team that's in the eight that can do most damage?
In the 10.
I'll give you an eight, and then I'll give you a 10. Because currently, as it sits, the teams outside the eight can't play finals. Right now, they can't play.
There's a wild card weekend.
There's no wild card weekend. Teams in the eight that can cause havoc. I think Port Adelaide, our team outside the eight that I think will be inside the eight by the end of the home and away season, the Western Bulldogs will be causing havoc. I'd hate to be playing the Bulldogs first week of the finals.
Rama?
I'd love to say Essendon, but it won't be them. Collingwood. Collingwood can cause the most havoc.
Boomer?
What Daniel said. Daniel's son. I like it. I think Port on their day are as nearly as good as anybody. But when they haven't got their day,
Jekyll and Hyde.
Yeah. When it's not their day,
that's dangerous.
Gee, it's crazy. But you know, you play finals, you just got to turn up on the day and get a gutsy little win, and then all of a sudden you're back into it. And totally agree with the Western Bulldogs, who are not sitting in the eight right now. If they make the eight, the way they are playing and their confidence, it's a bit of 2016 about them. Why not us? They're back to playing some really, really good football, and found some other players as well to add to that list.
They've got a forward structure now.
It's actually interesting. Daniel Hoyne on By the Numbers, Daniel.
The award-winning podcast. You can subscribe to Spotify, iTunes, and all those
exactly
podcast
right.
places.
He actually said a really interesting thing about the Dogs that everyone's talking about. It's the Dogs of a few years ago because they're coming hard, but they're playing completely differently.
Yeah, they are.
So it's not necessarily...
It's that feel, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a momentum and whatever else. But the way they're doing it, it's the razzle-dazzle Dogs as opposed to the blue-collar Dogs of a couple of years ago. So it's interesting.
I just like what they've added. You know, you've got Norton up forward now. You've got a couple of young kids that have come in and played in their first year. They're doing some different stuff. I like them.
Razzle dazzle from the back too. It's a little bit from D50. Like they've never seen
Crozier, Suckling.
Since 2014, they haven't had that level of conversion from inside 50s from D50 chains.
And one of their best ball users and runners off half back hasn't really had a great year in Johannesson.
JJ
hasn't set the world on fire. I don't think. I've been watched Western Bulldogs a couple of times live, and I just think that he's not giving him as much drive as he should be. If he kicks into another gear, well, there's another weapon again.
Last year we did the same thing. He missed, I think, 4 weeks leading up. We brought him straight in for the Sydney Swans final. So as disappointed as he was on Saturday, he gets over it quick and then he goes, right, I know what I've got to do, and he'll move on and away he goes again.
Coach of the Giants, Leon Cameron, telling Brett Deledio he's a chance. That's what he said yesterday. Brett Deledio is one of our favourites on the Breakfast Club. And yesterday he did announce that this season would be his last in the AFL. So we thought we'd track him down and talk to him about it. Lids, good morning.
Good morning, Half. Morning, fellas.
Well done yesterday. Handled it beautifully, the press conference and all that came with that. 274 games currently throughout your magnificent career. It's been weighing on your mind for a while, has it, or is it just something that's dawned on you recently?
I suppose as you get a bit older, and definitely with the injuries that I've had, that it does, it's always there in the back of your mind. And I think I said in my press conference, and I was talking to Wayne Campbell about it, as professional athletes, I think we trick ourselves that everything's going okay and we can push through and whatever else. And I probably did that to a certain extent with my career and how it was all going. But I'm very content with where it is now. And yeah, I think I can see the light at the end of the tunnel in that I've got the last few weeks to really push to try and play in the final series. And then, yeah, I will enjoy retired life, that's for sure.
So this time last week, Lids, was it always going to be the last year, or this later setback was like, nah, I can't do this anymore, it's too hard?
Good to hear from you, Whitey. I'm glad you're okay.
Yeah, no, I'm alive. I'm alive, Jas.
yeah, look, I know I was always probably hanging on to that little glimmer of hope that, you know, if I'd have played out the whole year, you know, that next year might have been a possibility. But I think this last one just showed after everything that I've done to try and get my calf right, it, you know, nothing seems to work, and I could get, you know, a game or two in next year and then be faced with another 8 to 10 weeks stint on the sidelines. And, you know, that's not good for me, my teammates, or most importantly, probably my family and my little girls, you know. So that's probably the biggest reason as to why it's just probably not going to work for next year.
So, Liz, we understand the physical toll, obviously, that the game has taken on you, unfortunately, over the last couple of years. Just take us through the emotional toll of having to back up and do rehab again, and, you know, rehab a calf or whatever injury that may be. And it's not only at the football club, but it's at home as well. And you sort of touched on that, I thought, yesterday, talking about your family and your wife and how much of a support it's been for their, you, they have been for you. But how tricky has that been on you emotionally?
Yeah, mate. I think the hardest part was that I come up here, you know, obviously off the back of a pretty ordinary 2016, and I really wanted to show the young boys and probably the rest of the world that I could, you know, play well at two different clubs, and I just didn't really get that opportunity, especially early at the Giants. It took me until around 17 or 18 to actually play a game. So emotionally, that was really draining. But then, you know, once I thought I had something worked out and everything was going really well with my calf, it just out of nowhere, something else would pop up. And when it comes and, you know, just kicks you in the teeth from nowhere, you sort of, it does rock you a fair bit, and it leaves you scratching your head for answers. So I think because it creeps up, it doesn't give you any warning signs, and it just appears out of nowhere. That's what makes it so hard to deal with. But as I said yesterday, my girls and you know, my wife have been incredible support for me, and you know, they Katie took a chance my coming up here and backed me in to try and you know, try something new and reinvigorate my career. And I've got a good egg there, I suppose. She's she's really helped out a lot and made it all worthwhile.
Brett, you spoke about the move to the GWS Giants. Tell us about that and the shift from Richmond. Are you glad that you went up there and had an opportunity to experience another football club and another culture?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I was thinking about this just the other day, and I know everyone will continually bring up and the hard luck story of 2017 and what had happened there at the Tigers. But when I had left the place, I was million to one to win the flag, and I'm not the only person who would say that, but what they did in turning around is absolutely incredible. But I've experienced something, not just the one club in Richmond. I was there for 12 years. I knew the place inside out and loved every minute of it, and incredibly grateful for playing there. But I got to come up here and experience the Giants and meet some new people, some new training regimes, the way people coach, and you know, I think that only helps me in the future in terms of you know, what experience I can bring if I go into coaching or whatever else life brings. But also, you know, added resilience to living up here by yourself with no family support or knowing anyone apart from Wayne and his wife Sarah. So it was an interesting challenge, but one that I never will regret or wish I hadn't done.
Yeah, and you mentioned that, excuse me, you mentioned that next phase of your football life is that coaching. You've been injured now for the last 3 years for a little bit. You would have done a fair bit of rehab, but in that rehab, I'm tipping that you would have mentored a few young boys coming through being such a young list. Is that something that you desire to do, going to that development or straight into coaching?
Yeah, it is. I have spent a lot of time, obviously, when you've got so much, you're not playing and really preparing yourself mentally to play, you sort of, you know, you get through your rehab and whatever else, you do get a lot of chances to spend time with young boys. And, you know, that is something that I'm really looking forward to. I dipped my toe in the water with the AFLW this year, doing some coaching with the girls, and that was absolutely fantastic. It really made me realise how much I think I would love to do that. So if that comes, I'm really excited for it. I've been planning to stay in the AFL or stay as a coach for most of my career, you know, so I've always been chipping away at it. But, yeah, just got to wait and see, and hopefully that a door opens for me.
The new coach of the Carlton Footy Club has been good enough to join us on the Friday Footy Preview. Teague, good morning.
Good morning, guys.
How different is this morning as opposed to other mornings when you were an interim coach?
No, not a lot different. The traffic's still there. It's slowing me down. But, no, there's still a job to do this weekend. So once you get to sort of Thursday, Friday, you're pretty focused on the job at hand. So that's where my attention is right now.
We will send our congratulations to you, though. I mean, it's an unbelievable opportunity. You spoke about it really well yesterday at the press conference, and 11 weeks ago or 10 weeks ago, I'm not sure if you thought it would have been a possibility, but you've taken all before you, Teague, and you've revolutionised and transformed this football club. Do you believe in yourself more now than you did 10 weeks ago?
Yeah, you do. You get belief from being able to execute, and probably what I didn't realise... You always sit there, you wonder, as a line coach, you think you can influence the group, but getting the whole group to buy in is the challenge. And when they gave me the reins, I knew I had some ideas that I wanted to implement, but I wasn't sure how it would go with the playing group, whether they're all on board. But what I've loved and what I've learned is they are, and you can see by the way the guys are playing. The support staff I've had have all been outstanding, and they've been on board. The players are bringing effort. And the fans are getting right behind them, which is really good to watch.
Was there a moment or a game in the first sort of two or three games that you coached where you thought, yep, I reckon I can do this, or this sits comfortably with me? Did that happen, or is it just something that's evolved in the last couple of months?
Yeah, it's probably evolved. I don't know if it was a moment. The very first time I spoke to the players was probably my most nervous, because I really wanted to make sure the messaging was strong early. And then when I was delivering that, when I had the group and the way they were looking at me when you're standing up the front, I felt like, yep, the boys are on board. They're really keen to do this. So that was one moment I recall. But from then, it's just been about continually learning and growing and developing. And I've made some mistakes along the way. But and we're going to continue to do that. We're a club that are going to make mistakes, but we're going to hopefully learn from them. And hopefully they're really aggressive ones and taking the game on and backing ourselves in.
We were lucky enough to speak to you when you announced caretaker coach just before your first game. And remember, we were talking to you on this radio station, this show. And you talked about...
Spoke to him.
Yeah, that's right. Well, we could have been having a coffee or something like that. But you said, we want to win this game. We're going to take this game on, and there's no reason why we can't win it. And that's what I've told the players. And we thought at the time, that's bold. We kind of liked it, the confidence you were trying to give the group. Is that going to continue now? What's going to be your style, or is it now that it all starts again when you are the actual man in charge?
No, nothing's going to change. We are, as a coaching group, pretty strong on our philosophies and how we think the game should be played, and how this group plays the game well. So nothing's going to change. We've gone out every single week to win. We haven't been good enough the last 2 weeks, but we showed we can compete with some really strong sides. We've got some growth, and we've got to get better. So we're not there yet, but I think if we continue to bring the effort and the way we've been training, then I think this group, every week they prepare well and they go out there to play. They're going to go out there to win.
David, you spoke yesterday about the belief you have in the playing group, the belief you have in the direction of the club. Now, we've seen a lot of new coaches in their press conferences, and they've said that as well. And you felt like, I wasn't sure if I ever believed other people, but for some reason I really believed you yesterday when you said that. Why are you so certain it's going to work for the Carlton Football Club as you now as coach?
I think there's been a lot of hard work that's already been done. I think Stephen Silvani, Brendan Bolton, they did a lot of work in terms of generating the list, and I think our list is quite talented. But talent only gets you so far, and what I've seen in the last... I've got the luxury of actually being in the club for a while and seeing the way they go about it and the character of the people. And the way they've been going about it gives me belief. I know the talent's there. I know they're working really hard. They want it. They're starting to feel what it feels like to sort of work hard and get that taste, and I think they're enjoying it. So I think it's only going to grow, and they're going to want that feeling after games more and more often.
David, congratulations, first of all, mate. Absolutely happy for you. You've been at three clubs, West Coast, Adelaide and Carlton now. Correct me if I'm wrong. Is that under John Westfold, Walsh, Pike and Bolton?
Correct. And I had a year under the Saints as well.
Okay. So is there a benefit of actually seeing different football clubs? Like myself, being at North Melbourne the whole time, I don't really understand any other football club. Is there a benefit of being at three or four different clubs and also having those coaches in Westfold, Walsh, Pike, Bolton to learn off? Will you have a certain style? Will that be David Teague's style, or will you take something from a little bit of from each?
You've definitely got to be authentic, and you've got to have your own style. But along the way, you're continuously learning. You're continuously learning about what works, and you're also going, oh, I don't think that does work. So you can't really copy someone else. You've got to be you, and that's what I probably learned that. I had a year where I tried to do, as an assistant coach, I tried to do exactly what I thought the senior coach wanted, and halfway through the year, I thought I was coaching poorly, and I said, stuff it, I'm just going to be me. And in the second half of the year, the senior coach went, where's this guy been? This is heaps better. So it was a great lesson for me as a younger coach. So, I'm very lucky. It wasn't so much planned to move around, and my poor family got dragged to Perth and got dragged to Adelaide, but in terms of the learning I got out of not only the senior coaches but the assistant coaches, there's a lot of good assistant coaches on the way that I've worked with. You're continually putting pieces together and adjusting things and challenging your own philosophy. So, I think I've been very lucky to have those experiences. And along with probably, I learned a lot coaching the Northern Bullants, where you get to make nearly all the decisions. There was a lot of learning that went on there.
Now you played under your old coach, Dennis Pagan, a fair bit. Will there be any Dennis Paganisms coming out in David Teague's coaching? Or have you already used them?
No, I throw up a few. Yeah, I go a few. But
what's been the favourite, Teague?
Up and down, like a honeymoon is 90s. One.
Love it.
Had a few, but it's sort of a bit old school now. They don't get it. They're like, honeymoon is 90. It's not as... they don't understand the concept around that one. So I learned a lot from Dennis, and the game hasn't changed in the sense that you've got to be able to do your basics well under pressure, and that was Dennis was big on that. So you've still got to... The first thing we did when I took over was we started putting a bit more time to kick handballs and ground balls. So we knew we needed just to nail our fundamental skills, which was something Dennis was very strong on.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.